Well, there's a little red light on here.
Okay.
And, you know, I suspect that has something to do with electrons flowing through this cable that's going into the wall. Okay.
These ones wouldn't give it away, but that one.
Yes,
and
but I,
that
I,
one.
I only have this one to work with. So there we go.
It's why I turned it this way, Thomas.
And being a writer, you have to be resourceful. So I got a red light. There's my prompt.
Well, it's a rather lively sounding room, so I'm rather glad for that too.
Cool.
So
yes.
Anywho, getting started.
Are you actually recording already?
Yes.
Well, what a concept.
Yes.
This is the way writing on WouldBeIsland.com works. And the man that's laughing, his name would be?
My name is Don Scobie. The man who introduced me is Tom
Trimbath.
And today we are here with...
And where's here? Wait, where's
what?
Here? Here?
Oh,
here
we'll come right back to
okay,
here.
Okay, we will.
We'll come right back to here.
Get.
But we are with...
Daniel Edward Moore.
There we go. Okay, so...
Is it always Daniel Edward Moore?
That's the writer's name. That's my name. And I had to switch to a full name because about 7 or 8 years ago, I discovered a really famous other poet named Daniel Moore, great African-American guy, and I didn't want there to be any difficulty in navigating where the work was at, and so I just chose that. Plus, I love my full name. So.
Well, that's good. Yeah. but there is that sort of thing where it is...
He passed away 2 years ago, and I thought about redoing that. I thought, no, there's enough now publication stuff to, yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. So, anyway, today we are in Oak Harbor, and more specifically, we are on Pioneer Street, which is one of the older roads in town, and we are at a shop that is relatively new. It actually opened November 5th, 2019, so just a matter of months ago, and it is called Would Be Made, and it is a delightful shop. You walk in here, and it has a wonderful atmosphere, and what more is you end up seeing all these beautiful artisan gifts. Between, I don't even want to guess, but we could walk through
tea,
the shop.
Tea, wine, I'm looking at paintings.
Leatherwork.
I'm guessing that there's fabric art out there. And she's
woodwork.
Nodding her head.
Yes.
She doesn't want to participate, but she will give nods and grunts.
One of the proprietors, Catherine, is looking over our shoulder here. She's also a fan of poetry.
She's an angel looking over your shoulder.
Oh, yes.
Ah, yes.
The left one or the right one?
Write your own narrative from that.
Anyway, with respects to Would Be Made, it's this shop that Catherine and Brian envisioned and more or less said, we've got to go for it. Let's do this. We don't know where it's going to go, but they have this dream. So they open up this shop, and everything here is local made. It's Would Be Island made goods. So do come down to Oak Harbor. Do come down to Pioneer. Do come to Would Be Made and step on in. It's a fascinating shop, delightful items here. Also, most important, when you have people that are visiting from out of town and they want Would Be Island souvenirs, send your tourists here, by all means.
Mm-hmm. And Pioneer Way is, you know, it's not just this one shop. I mean, it's definitely a destination in its own right. So,
absolutely.
So do that. We'll have all the information in the links and things like that, in the text and whatnot. But for now, we're here to talk about...
Where we are meeting. Where we are meeting. They have this small room in the back of the shop, and you can rent this room. And you could fit, depending on what you're doing, what you're teaching or working on, workshops, what have you. You could fit 4 or 5 people in here, maybe 6, depending on what you're doing. And it's rent by the hour. It's a very good price, and it's a wonderful little room. So if you have some sort of purpose, like... I don't know, a couple of quilters to get together, maybe teaching a small painting class, something like that. Well, ask them. See about renting this room. It's delightful.
Yeah, I can actually see using this as a place for half a dozen writers to hang out and work on collaborative projects.
Sure. Absolutely.
Because how much room does a writer and a laptop take?
Or a notepad?
No, you have to have a cup of tea. Thank you so much.
Anyway.
She has good tea here, just so you know. Anyway, back to poetry.
So our guest today, you've got the paperwork you were going to give me. I do have some of it memorized, though.
Well, you can have him read it. He wrote it.
Yeah. Anyway, as the full name Daniel Edward Moore goes, he lives on Would Be Island, and he has had poems in the Spoon River Poetry Review, Columbia Journal, Cream City Review, Western Humanities Review, Phoebe, Mid-American Review, December, and others. His poems are forthcoming in Weber Review, Tool Review, and that's T-U-L-E. I'm probably pronouncing it wrong. Mm-hmm. The Cape Rock, Magnolia Review, Kestrel, The Phoenix, Red Earth Review, Writer's Block Magazine, that's a great name, and Rambler. His chapbook, Boys, from Duck Lake Books, was released December 1st, just recently, and that's the third book out of his publications.
Second.
Second, yeah. Okay.
And the book is actually newer than the shop, and the shop isn't very old.
Right.
I'm feeling like an old fart here.
Time to publish another book. His book, Waxing the Dents, a finalist for the Brick Road Poetry Prize, was released February 1st, and his work has been nominated for Pushcart Prizes and Best in the Net, Internet. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. Visit him at Daniel Ward... I'm sorry, I'm reading that wrong, too. Okay, DanielEdwardMoore.com, all one word right there. Daniel ended up getting referred to Tom and I through the Oak Harbor Library, which the Snow Isle Library System already has a rather good writing-oriented program and supports writers. And I ended up, actually, you'll remember from a couple of podcasts ago when we interviewed PJ Bevan with her EarthFit books. And while I was there, I ended up speaking with one of the librarians, mentioned about what writing on WoodbyIsland.com. And she turned around and said, we have this Daniel Edward Moore. I'm going to refer him. You need to know about this guy.
I know this woman.
But part of it too.
Sounds like they have you in a drawer in back. You know,
is the cot decent? How is librarian coffee? There's the hard Q&A we don't do. In any case, I know that one of the things you do is actually, and explain this for me because I know I'm going to get it wrong. You have a poetry writing organization that you do with your wife for 3 years now,
yeah,
through the Oak Harbor Library. Tell us about that.
So the Oak Harbor Poetry Project began 3 years ago in the attempt to have a monthly open mic experience and bring in a featured poet, which we pay to come in and do a featured spot. And it just operates from January through October. We take November and December off. But the main purpose of the group was to really provide Whidbey Island with a consistent spot, a safe, loving, intentional spot where young poets specifically could come out and kind of test the waters and find older poets that could kind of provide more mature embracing of their work and give them a really safe atmosphere to kind of come out and experiment what that was like. So the first year we were, like I said, it was kind of experimental. The second year, a lot of Seattle poets found out, I had a little bit of connection there, and they found out what we were doing, and they just really wanted to come. And so we had a really big array of major poets from Seattle. This year we kind of shifted gear. We have a bunch of people from Bellingham coming down.
Were they coming
to do the featured spots?
Oh, okay.
So yeah, they wanted to come and be the featured so that they could kind of meet the Oak Harbor poets. And so it just really took off. And now, and then last year we had four Whidbey Island poets. We had five Whidbey Island poets that were features, and the other people came from outlying areas. So it's just really kind of like, you know, we want to get more focused on the homegrown reality of that there are poets in the North End, in the South End, in the middle of the... And kind of like also break down what we perceive to be historical walls between art and writing and groups just based on geography. I have a famous joke. I lived in Freeland. I lived in Coopville. I've been in Oak Harbor now for 4 years. But we have a famous joke about people who are unwilling to drive from Langley.
Oh,
it's not Nebraska.
No.
It's not. You know, it's not Nebraska.
No.
If anybody's told you it's Nebraska, we apologize. You know, it's a doable one-hour drive, right? So we feel really honored and really blessed, though, that the project has, kind of fleshed out what our original vision was for it and is becoming something even more. And the Snow Isle partnership with us has just been outstanding. They're just, like, super, super... you know, embraced it 100%. And
are they asking you to take it to the rest of the branches? Snow Isle, for folks who aren't familiar with the area, is the
Snow
consortium
Homish
between Snohomish County and Island County.
Yeah.
Snow Isle.
They haven't asked us.
Which means there's, like, there's dozens of libraries they can pick
sure.
into.
Sure. We do the workshop Tom I was referring about, writing 101 workshop, Writing Inside Out, that my wife and I do. We've offered that in the soil system. But the reason we chose to come to the, because, you know, we live in the neighborhood here, we chose Oak Harbor was because we wanted to be a neighborhood responsible event. You know, we wanted to be able to say, hey, this is my hometown. This is what I do. I work here. I live here. I make art here. And so, yeah, we had some, a little bit of struggle at one point with some decisions during the break about maybe going to Coopville because I have a really cool thing with Leslie Franz at the library there. She's all over that. And I was
that
like,
sounds like a romance novel right there.
And I was like, no, let's stay in Oak Harbor. So we decided to do that. So, but we feel really grateful that we've been able to do that.
So when you started describing that, you're talking about, you know, young poets coming in and learning from experienced poets.
Right.
Did you have that experience when you were starting?
Absolutely.
Did you get started as a poet?
Absolutely. So, Palm, back in 1993, I was at a garage sale in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and I looked over at a table, and completely unbeknownst to me is Sylvia Plath's Ariel, a ragtag book just laying there.
Oh, wow.
I have zero information about who Sylvia Plath is.
Oh, right.
I did journal at the time, but I was not a poetry, you know, exposed to that at all. So, needless to say, I think I paid a dollar for it or something. I took it home, and it changed my entire life. Hmm. It gave me permission to own so much of my humanity that I had zero ability to even get in touch with before. I mean, lines like, I have suffered the atrocity of sunsets. That kind of line. Yeah. Those kind of words. And I remember maybe 2 or 3 months into that, I was like, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
I want that integrity. I want that power. I want that authenticity. I want to have the courage to speak that kind of truth. So I began to scratch out poetry. The next thing I knew, about 6 months later, I'm on the back of a music store on a deck in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and completely, again, unbeknownst to me, Coleman Barks, the roomy scholar at the University of Georgia, is hosting an open mic. I know nothing what's happening. All I know is Coleman Barks, roomy scholar, and I do an open mic, and this woman comes up to me afterwards, and she goes, you know what? I'm Jazz Milam. And I have heard a lot of poets. She's a graduate from Vermont College. She said, I would love for you to come and have dinner with an artist group that I've been part of for a few years and just check us out, whatever.
She goes, oh, yeah.
So I did. They had been together for 5 or 6 years. I joined them like 3 months later after doing some novice work with them. I was with them for 10 years.
Oh, wow.
Every Monday night, common meal, sharing art, making art. And that was really the birthplace of my life as a poet.
So when you say sharing art, was it all...
No, visual artists and writers. Yeah.
And
it came and went. There was approximately like 6 to 8 of us at a time, depending on who. But we went through marriages, divorces, had children. I mean, we literally shared
that. It's material.
No, it was the meat of life.
You know? Yes,
I mean, it was really the meat of life. So I couldn't have been more honored to have had that. And Jazz Milam did the cover for my Waxing the Dense book, and then my wife did the cover because she's a visual artist for Boys. So you know, just the art writing relationship. That's
anyway, with the Waxing the Dense. Have you seen his truck and my truck?
Yeah, it fits, right? Okay, yeah.
It's material. It has character.
It sponsors poetry.
But I'm not waxing mine. But I understand the concept.
Yeah, yeah.
No, that's what I was curious about, because when somebody is...
I'd be afraid to wax my truck. Probably more paint would come off while I was doing it.
It would finally hold together some of the pieces that don't want to stay together.
Yeah.
But no, it's that sort of thing where, you know, you're already looking at, you know, helping somebody else along rather than just putting yourself higher up the ladder.
Exactly. I think, well, you know, for me too, it's just a spiritual practice, is that the giving back principle of serving the community as an artist is, that's just a no-brainer. I mean, it's just a non-entity. That's what it means to be an artist. That's what it means to be a writer, is that you're serving the world. That's why publication for me is not some kind of grandiose attempt at hierarchy. It's a way to be socially engaged. If you think about it, if you have not found poets that had written books that changed your life, the reason you wouldn't have found them is because they never got published.
Oh, yeah.
So they took publication seriously. You know, they took responsibility to get into the world so other people could hear their voice. Well, I learned that early on. It was like, no, I want to be heard. I have something to say. And it's important. So just take responsibility and do it. So,
yeah. Well, that's kind of, you know, when I think about it, I'm not to the same level as you, but that's, you know, part of the basis behind this podcast.
Yeah.
is just how many folks do we know that are in our community,
right?
And we want to be able to give them voice.
Yeah, it's a great service.
Now, if we can help to sell his cookbook, and who cares about the books I write?
Tom, don't say that.
Well, Tom,
I know who cares about the books I write.
Tom has a famous story of having written a book about the economy, and right as it was publishing, the economy went down.
Yes.
So his information was going one direction, the actual economy was going another direction.
Timing is an issue.
Right.
Yeah. And that's the thing I think is, I'm assuming that from what you're describing, that your material is going to work across a period. It's not just this year's topic.
No, and these books are about, you know, the bodies of work, they merge a little bit. There's 12 poems in Dents that are also in Boys, which, because this is a chapbook. But they cover a spectrum of, like, you know, there's poems in Dents that are 20 years old, literally, from different parts of my life. So
is it 20 years old and never touched, or do you go back and polish?
Oh, I am a revision junkie. Pure and simple. I am a revision. No, I mean, and I really, I mean, you know, for someone who doesn't really, I don't have no academic training, I'm all self-taught, and I do adhere to the principle of that reading poetry is writing poetry. Mm-hmm. There is no division between that. That's another one of those seamless things. So for me, the art of making the craft of the work has always been, you know, I know what it's like to get do a first draft, second draft, third, but really, I don't think of drafts. I just don't stop writing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I literally don't track that at all. I am always part of another write. I'm also part of another writer's group that I always have an inside. Yeah, I have an inner sanctum group at all times. And so that craft group and I do the, you know, do the boot camp stuff. And then Oak Harbor Poetry Project gives me, you know, I can do the open mic once a month with those folks and share a couple pieces. But then my main thing is to get socially engaged by publications so that I can have people speak back to me through my website, buying the books, and just whatever is occurring to them. And it's got to be cathartic. You know, it has to be cathartic. I mean, it's just not some kind of idealistic experiment with language, you know what I mean? The joke about, if you want to write a poem that tells me how much Beethoven's piano stool was a metaphor for his mother's menstrual cycle, I just want to slit my wrist. Okay? I mean, literally. And then what I mean by that is that there's no moral authority in the work if someone's not willing to share what their life is about in their art. I think it just lacks moral authority. So, and you know, I've kind of been on that train from the beginning. You know, that's what I write about myself. I write about my experience of life in the world and family and sexuality, politics, religion. I mean, it's everything. Yeah, it's there.
Well, once you open up.
Yeah, it's just like, real. It's, yeah. I don't want to be good or excel. I want to be real. You know, I just want to, yeah. So.
Well, and I hesitate on how to phrase this because we're writers, and of course we're going to wordsmith everything. But I get the impression from very few writers that they've reached the end, that they're done, they're not getting any better.
Oh, no, no. I mean, that's the journey is everything, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it all is the journey. It's all the process, not the product.
So if you find that you get to the end of a poem and you go, oh, I could have made that better.
Oh, what?
That's a natural.
Sure. Great experience. I just had two poems accepted by the University of Amsterdam last week at Writer's Block. That's the Writer's
Excellent.
Block. Right. And what they said to me was, it was really interesting. I had just revised both of them again. They've only been out for about 6 months. And I had just finished revising both of them again because I just felt like I could do some tweaking on it. And so I said, okay, I'm so happy you took them and they're going to come out like at the end of March. But I said, here's two revisions, if you don't mind. Then they were getting out of, they were cutting, there was some semester break. This is student run. And they said, wait a minute, but their editors are the professors that run the English department at the university. So the one professor already wanted to redo Fluidity with the original, and then I sent them both. But anyway, the final thing is that Fluidity is coming back to me with suggestions from the editor guy, but the other revision of the poem, If Holy Can Be Improved On, they love the first version. They said, thank you so much for sending the revision, but we're not interested. They want the first version, and they want Fluidity to be run by me from the professor.
Because this is something I recognize with some other friends of mine who are poets, which is, you know, I write well, the way I put it is, I give me 2 2x4s, I'll put a nail through them, and you've got something. Yeah. My friends are making wood sculpture.
Yeah.
But that the poet, I will work right hundreds of thousands of words an hour.
Sure.
A poet will spend hundreds of thousands of hours on a word.
There, yeah, but that's a great analogy.
And it's just astonishing to see that you can have that kind of intensity.
Yeah.
To self-critique every word that you write.
Yeah, and I don't do that. I mean, I do a language review at some point in the revision process, but basically it's the emotional syntax and tone of the poem that plays with the music and where words are landing and what content is being revealed. You know, and then sometimes, you know, I'm just hijacked by a poem. I mean, literally, like I have zero idea what's going on. You know, and so I got a new draft the other day called The Choreography of Drowning, and it's all about this weirdness of like an end time something with our, you know, situation in our life, and with Noah and the flood and patriarchy slamming the door on the world, the ark of the world, and just, and I have a really weird Christian history which I'm recovering from, and so I've written a lot of reconstructionist biblical stuff. A lot of my work has that. And then I was very blessed when I met my wife, who was a visual artist at the time, and also a writer that I didn't know about at the time. But we did an entire body of work for 2 years called Biblical Erotica. And it was
there's some steam in there.
Because what we did is we took back all that language and we just completely sensualized it, you know, reclaimed the heritage with our bodies, let the body become the source of all that. And then when she was doing visual art, I was writing poetry, and we did some shows in Seattle, and it was really killer
stuff.
And
it seems like that would take a particular type of courage.
And it took a loving relationship.
Yes.
It took that to kind of blossom that. So.
Wow. I can't put anything in
there. Come on, Don, you've got
the one thing that I'm thinking about, and we were talking about this a little bit before the show began, where what I'd said was, and I liken it to Dead Poets Society.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Here, Robin Williams' character shows up to this private boys' school. Okay, great, you're a teacher, you've got your subject. Here's the book you're teaching from, and it's this poetry book. And he's looking at it saying, okay, you know, let's teach the structure of blah, blah. No, that's bogus. He rips that part of the book out, tells all of his students to rip that out, chuck it, and open things up for them, right? So what I was saying was that I found writing difficult because what teachers were telling me, and this was creative writing, this was essays, whatever.
Sure.
All I was ever told was, okay, you need to write an essay. Show me what you did. Okay, that's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong.
Yeah.
But I was never really told, here's how to do it. Mm. Here is what is right.
Sure.
Right? So then when it came to teachers saying, oh, we're going to write poetry with pentameter. Pinto what tater? You know, well, it has to be like this, right? Yeah. And it's you know, tennis with the lines on the court,
right,
you know?
Right.
I mean, heck, it's got a roof over it even.
Yeah.
Not just the chain link fence, right? So, okay, I'm trying to fit words within this structure, this pentameter. Okay, I couldn't do that. And I was told, that's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong, but never what was right. And then, as I said, it was in high school, a particular girlfriend of mine would show me these writings that were just these different length lines. And she handed them to me and said, I wrote a poem. Here, read this. Well, this isn't poetry, right? But then I learned of free verse.
Sure.
Oh, and at one point, I started writing this. And for me, that there was nothing. It was tennis without the lines.
Yeah.
There was nothing saying, you can't do it this way, you can't put these two words together, it's not okay that they don't make sense.
Sure.
I mean, okay, it was tennis without the lines, but I needed that.
Yeah.
And I found my voice with that. And one of the things that I'm reflecting with what you're talking about too, where you're a revision junkie.
Yeah.
When it comes to my poetry, which I still write, I don't write as much as I used to. Seems that I write really good stuff when I do now, which is cool. And I would like to get it into a book of my own at some point, but I've got as many pieces as Robert Burns did. I don't know that they're as good. I'm sure that they're not. In any case, what I've always found with writing poetry for me is it's the Polaroid photo, right? You take it, it's done. More what my approach is I find my inspiration, and I'm very inspiration-based with poetry, I'll start writing. And I'll get to a certain spot, and it kind of stops. Maybe I'll chug out a little bit more, and then it comes to a full stop. I reread it and edit it, and I may do a few small edits beyond that. Okay. But basically, I write it, and I edit it. It's done.
Okay.
Because for me, it's partly, even if I'm just talking about something that is timeless, like walking down a footpath and seeing frost on the plants that morning. Mm-hmm. What year is that? Any year, any century, any decade, right? Yeah. But part of it is, what's that emotional capture?
Yeah.
What's that experience that I captured within those words?
Sure.
And I want to capture that moment in that time.
Gotcha.
But if I edit it, it becomes no longer that moment.
Hmm.
And it's just the different
interesting
approaches. Yeah.
I think for me, what you're describing, though, is kind of like a pastoral poetry tradition, which is really rooted in nature and rooted more in reflection with a nature relationship.
Sure.
I am not a pastoral poet. I was very blessed, though. I lived in when you come into Coopville, the big grave, not Jenny Farmhouse, the Scooby Farmhouse on the right that overlooks. Oh, yeah. I rented that for 5 years because Bill and Jan Scooby are good friends of ours. And it was absolute heaven to wake up every morning and look over those prairies and the ocean.
And folks who aren't aware, that's actually a preserved part of the National Park Service, the local conservancy, the History Society. It's a gorgeous piece of art.
It's a gorgeous piece of art, yeah. And it was, so I was then given the gift, though, of forming that. You know, I wrote poetry. I have a whole chapter called Ghost Minority. It's about the shadow of Whidbey Island, though. It's not about beauty. It's kind of a Rokian thing, beauty and terror being the same thing.
There's some dark stories here.
There are some really dark stories. And they're in my book. They're in my chapbook that I hope gets a publisher soon. So I think that's what you're talking about, though, Don. It's just that in pastoral poetry, nature is enough for pastoral poets. I mean, it's kind of like a contemplative relationship to poetry, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And that makes total sense. So maybe it wouldn't require as much editing because it's so clear about what you're writing about. I don't have that kind of physical...
What's the shortest turnaround you've seen on having an idea, starting to put it down, and going... Not that it's done, but that's good enough.
Oh, that's a good question.
For instance, I'll use the example of Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah.
Different type of poem, of course. But, there's some that he's worked on a long time.
Sure.
But Margaritaville was a half-hour job.
Interesting. Wow, I did not know.
But at the same time, why not spend...
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I have, though, the knowledge of what would be the shortest time, because I've always been revised. I always revise.
That's what I was trying to get for. So that is that ingrained in you that
I just know that. Well, that's why I'm so clear. Like with younger, it's like, you know, when you're writing something out, and my main poetic relationship is actually with a really good friend of mine in Kentucky, South Bend, Kentucky, across from Portsmouth, Ohio, where my parents are from. And we work every week together. And so, you know, it's like Kevin and I say, it's like, you know, we know what a first draft is concretely. We can hear the drafts evolve, but we don't ever think about when they're going to be done. We just celebrate the process.
Yes.
We just celebrate the process and the evolution. And then, you know, I do, though, now, because I have really good relationships with a lot of editors, I will send editors work specifically to a submission, especially if it's a theme thing, just for the sake, and they know this without saying, but I'm really just using them as a testing board, you know, because they're going to write me. They like my work, and they're going to say, Daniel, wow, you know, this came really close, so I'd love to keep this till next fall because we've got this theme issue coming out, blah, blah, blah. And I will then gain the incredible wisdom and compassion of these editors at major journals to go, Daniel, you know.
Because that was an impressive list of reviews that you're in.
Yeah.
Is that how you've developed that?
But, you know, what happened was I was in that art night group I was telling you about. Okay, yeah. So I show up there for a Monday night, and I'm like, 34 years old. And these people have come out of, like, Vermont College, and I forget all the places. They were really classically trained artists, right? And Maida looks at me, Maida looks across the room, and she goes, Daniel, because I have something really important to ask you. She goes, two things. One, will you consider changing your name to just Daniel, not Daniel Moore, but just Daniel, because they all refer to me as Dan, to Daniel Moore? And I said, well, why is this me? She goes, because your name Daniel is what you use as a writer, and that way it would be consistent with Dan, you know, just to make it more of a life thing. And second of all, I'd had about 30 poems or so maybe published the very first year I started taking publication. But this is before the internet. This is when all handwritten stuff, rejections in the mailbox every day, right? But Maida says to me, she goes, Daniel, if you really believe that the quality of your work is where it's at, do this. Start from the New Yorker down.
Yes.
And do not do rag magazines. Do not do independent journals. And just see what happens.
Yes.
Guys, this is miraculous. I took her up on this. I was scared to death, though, by the way. It was, like, terrifying to have a really, you know, just all of it. But I could trust what she was saying. I was honored by the suggestion. But what happened was, from that time, and 18 months later, 56 major, like Spoon River, and I won 3 national contests in 18 months when I shifted gears.
Marvelous.
So it's kind of a reflection that I do think there's that really weird thing where, you know, we think we might be caught up with the internal, external relationship of our life in the world as artists, but not really. We're never, if we're not, and I think that's the joy of not knowing, is that all of a sudden, you don't know what's going to happen as a result of this next creation and the whole, but then all of a sudden, like when these books were accepted 2 months apart, and I had people going, Daniel, that's really great news, but you should be very scared. That was exactly what they said.
Oh,
yeah. No, and they didn't mean scared as in fear. They meant, Daniel, the overwhelming responsibility to take these books into the world after some, you know, and these editors were fighting to be the first to release. They took it back 4 to 6 months. They cut all their agendas. It got weird for a time. But that's what they meant. It was like, it's a lot of responsibility. It's a lot of responsibility. So,
but there is that courage of, I've done this.
Yeah.
Now who am I going to show it to?
Exactly.
And the safest one is the newspaper that's only published twice a week.
Right.
On the island that never goes anywhere else, as compared to, like you say, why start there? Start with the other and then work your way back.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm still thinking about where you're talking about pre-internet submission.
Yeah.
Right, just in I love it because at one point too, I ended up seeking out a typewriter. I'm just going to type on a typewriter,
right?
Even though we were starting to see, you know, internet, everything that way, I was like, yeah, I'm going to do like Jack Kerouac did.
That's what we were doing.
Going to have a typewriter, but now I'm thinking because you were saying, I'm using these editors for free.
Yeah.
And I was going to say, all for the price of a stamp, but why would you?
No. Right? I didn't know email paper. It.
But, that right. was, but yeah. here's the thing. Yeah. So pre-internet submissions and waiting for the responses, whether they're plus or minus, you end up getting a weird emotional relationship with your mailbox.
Yes, that's true. That is so true.
Especially if you're working with somebody who doesn't want simultaneous submissions and they're going to take 4 months to get back to you.
It was hard.
Because I know I was trying to get my first book out that way, and that was hundreds of dollars.
Yes.
Because it wasn't just you just
postage,
sent the file.
You know.
And they wanted color photos if you had color photos, and what's the cover look like, and all this sort of thing. And you were doing it back then.
So think of it for all of us guys. If we went through that in our early
years. So we've just established that you and I are old.
Yes, that's right. Very old. 63. Yeah, so isn't it? So I think it's really cool, though, to look at that from a, you know, so have no remorse nowadays, because look at what's little of this is expected of us as far as the technology giving us the means to communicate. It's just amazing, right? It's just, I use Submittable, I'm sure you guys, right?
I'm off familiar.
Oh, well, see, I have a built-in secretary in my computer that manages my whole life.
Oh, marvelous.
Yeah, so Submittable.com, you do a trope, Submittable, comes under like 4 or 5 different services now. So what you do is, just look them up. And then what you do is you form an account, and then you can submit all of your work. They give you a whole list of stuff to choose, a whole encyclopedia of journals that are listed every month. But then, of course, just become familiar with the genre that you're working in, because they cover everything. And then you then establish a submittal. I right now have 193 journals looking at work this very moment.
Oh, marvelous.
193. And I average about 150 to 170. And this is not like the same poems. These are very deliberate, intentional sets of work, rebound work, themed issues, deadline issues, and some money issues now that I finally am making some money. So it's a really weird thing for me, but it's good.
Let's make a distinction. So you're finally making some money at it. Your main job is something completely different. No.
I have a really good straight job.
It's not a stated theme for this blog, but it's interesting to get past that idea. To be a successful writer, you're making lots of money.
No.
Not necessarily.
It also just comes down to that. What's your definition of success?
Exactly. Yes. Right. Very important questions. Yeah.
I mean, because I'm finally making money writing now, but it's like I say, I'm banging two by fours together with nails.
Yeah.
But the fact that I can do that on time, on voice, on word count, on deadline, you know, but that's a different thing than what you're doing. Absolutely. What you're doing is art. What I'm doing is art. Better font for your
still art. when we're writing books, whether it's myself doing a recipe book or a sheet music book with history, yourself writing about the economy, writing about writing across the country, those have a technical element. From my own experience with poetry writing, I've always looked at it as literary jazz.
It's more of an
expression, a pure expression within the written word.
Go with that.
And I think.
When's your poetry?
That's really good. I know what I would love for you to think about doing, though, Dom, because I just love your honesty about your relationship to poetry. It's so cool. We do the Poetry Inside Out workshop for Freeland, and on April 29th, it's a Wednesday from 2 to 4. They're sponsoring that. So anyway, if you just want to get what we have, our little niche about Poetry 101 and some of this basic stuff, you're welcome to come.
Is that different than the Oak Harbor?
No. It's a workshop that we do for Snow Lion. We made it for them like 4 years ago, and then whoever the libraries then reach out to us and sponsor us. And Freeland, we signed us up like last year. It's for National Poetry Month.
Oh, cool.
So we'll be doing that.
National Poetry Month is?
In April.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you're going to give us a link to that one?
So here's the cool thing about that. So I've got a bunch of readings off island and bookstores in Seattle and Bellingham. But I'll be doing the only National Poetry Month reading on the island that I'm aware of from the Snow Isle system is in Coopville, featuring me from, I think it's 2 to 4 on Sunday the 26th. It is April 26th of Sunday. And then we're back in Freeland then on the 29th, that Wednesday, from 2 to 4, do the workshop.
Sorry, I'm chuckling because you said Coopville on the 26th?
Yeah.
So I've got a talk coming up the next day. But that's okay. Coopville?
Well, Tom, you can crash at my place.
It's not Nebraska.
When you wake up the following morning to go and give your presentation, you can borrow a canoe and just go right across the cove in Whidbey Island style. Or ride your bike.
Let's see, how long would it take me? Yeah. Anyway.
Bike will be faster.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of curious if there's... I want to make sure we get in anything else that we haven't talked about. Anything else that you have on your mind? Because you had no idea what we were going to do with
you. No, this is going to be wonderful for you guys. Okay, I just would love to direct people, though, to their website if they are interested in future readings, because like I was telling Tom before we started, I do have I think it's 12 to 14 other readings still between now and the end of National Poetry Month in April. And if anyone would like to, avail themselves to come and hear me. Doing a reading, I'm kind of more of like a performance poet. I mean, it's not just... I mean, it's... It's different, I really kind of theatrically,
I've been told that poetry is performance.
Yeah, there we go. And I just really take it. So I rehearse my work, and I want the performance, the page to the stage relationship, to be as seamless as possible.
That sounds like the chapter title in some book. The page to stage, just like Tennis Without the Lines. Sounds like a great title for a book.
Or from Inspiration to Publication.
Because we were doing presentations at Snow Owl about self-publication.
Sure, So Confessions of a Pentecostal Buddhist was the only self-published book I did, my first draft book.
Yes.
And by CreateSpace. And I was really honored. My writing group at the time are the ones that really advocated for me to do that. And their big thing was that, Daniel, when you go out and do readings, people want to take you home with them. No, literally, they really do. And not personally, but so they're like, literally, why do you consider just doing that for that purpose, to be really clear, which I did, and I was very happy. And then all of a sudden I started doing, getting these manuscripts together, and then this happened. I thought, okay, so I don't know if self-publishing is in my future at all. I think I would just rather keep doing this step process with seeing one. I have another manuscript that's just being finished right now, which I'm really excited about, called Hardcore Happiness Myths, which is a poem title from mine. And
wow. So what are the titles that you have out there about to come out?
Confessions of a Pentecostal Buddhist by CreateSpace, Boys, a Chapbook from Duck Lake, and Waxing the Dunce.
And then the next one is?
Is Hardcore Happiness Myths.
Ah, so we've got the inside skinny.
Yeah, and it really deals with the thing about that. I have a Buddhist practice. The thing about that, what I'm exploring in that, is that everything that I think we even, anything that probably exists outside of a moment kind of experience of happiness, just becomes so delusional. And what I'm doing is, I'm really kind of, but I'm exposing my own addiction to delusion in that respect too. So
Write that down.
So I think it's kind of like, I have a series of letter poems. They're dear poems and then elegy poems. And it was originally going to be Dear Elegy. It was going to be the manuscript. And all of a sudden, Hardcore Happiness Myths became a poem, which then became the title for the book. And I've got two really great poets in Seattle that are helping me on the manuscript right now. So it should be done in the latest, about 3 months, ready to go out. So.
Well, seriously or jokingly, between the two of you, you said, so Don, when are you writing your poetry book? And here, I've got all this material. And
I would just love to help you. And honestly, I would, seriously.
Everything's already typed. At one point, I had this three-ring binder that's basically about 500 pages thick.
Wow.
And I said, I need to do something with that, even with the ones that are crummy, and just type all of them up.
Yeah.
And weeks, nights, months, whatever it was, I just systematically cranked through these, turned through these. And
did you to separate them, to find to make a selection of the ones?
Partly just to preserve them, since they were on paper, and I had to kind of gather everything up and stick it into this book, and I date everything. And it made sense to just turn it into electronic.
Okay.
Because at some point later on, if I do something with this, it's going to need to be electronic, not Jack Kerouac's typewriter.
Right.
So
are you open to revising those group of poems? Are you open to looking?
We can talk.
Okay. There's that word again. Revise.
Oh no! Stand back.
Well, and at this point, I mean, because part of it too is with Tom. I met Tom through him solo teaching the self-publishing workshop about 2014 or so.
Okay.
It was one of the very first things that I went to that the Snow Isle Library System offered workshops.
Right, yeah.
So I show up, here's this guy, seems knowledgeable, little nuts, but likable guy, and I approach him.
He has a great reputation on the island.
I have no clue.
I knew about it before I met you at that writer's thing I was talking about.
Anyway, I asked Tom if I could record his presentation, and I said, some of this is so I can listen to it again and learn from it, and I'll very gladly get you the recording. As far as I'm concerned, you own the copyright, what have you.
Yeah.
I stayed in touch with Tom, and I had taken his card, and we kind of ran into each other more and more. And then at one point too, after doing my baking, toward the end of doing my baking business, I approached Tom and I said, I'm seeing the writing on the wall with the bakery, but I'm thinking of pivoting my company from making cookies to telling you how to make cookies.
Interesting.
Right. So I said, can you give me some more coaching on the self-publishing? And we continued to build things there too. And at one evening, I'm sitting at his place and thinking that I'm about 2 weeks from finishing my book. I was actually about 6 months. And then when I was actually 2 weeks, I had a hard drive crash, but that's a different story.
That answers my question on revision.
Ooh!
Now we're really cool. Ba-boom
crash. Not the quick ba-doom crash. That's kind of the dark ba-doom crash. Anyway, so Tom ends up asking me at one point during this evening, he says, well, what kind of money do you want to make off your book? And I said, well, I know authors and books don't make much. I mean, I'd like to make at least a dollar or two per copy, and $5 would be great. And he said, would you like to make more? And then he talked about the percentage that you can't actually see from self-publishing, and I go, oh, wow.
Yeah.
And we get done what we're doing. I go home, and my mind is just spinning, because it also does. But
yeah, it wasn't waiting for me to spin. Right.
I ended up doing what I also do. I'm a big Excel guy. I open up Excel and I start writing the books that I had already worked on, put on the shelf, the books I could do, the books that popped into my head in that moment, whatever. And I've still been building this thing. And at this point, it's books, albums, t-shirts, aprons, hats, coffee cups, whatever.
Right? Captain's ready to pass out.
Yeah.
She's worn out. She's exhausted.
Anyway, one of those ones that I put on there was a poetry book because I've done all of this work.
Yeah, yeah.
So between, we've now gone a long way around the barn twice, I think, at least twice. Taking that comment moments ago of, so Don, when's your poetry book coming out? Let's use that. What would you say, coming from the workshops that you do, what would you tell someone that is looking to do their first poetry book, whether they are just a poet, not published, they are published? What would you tell somebody that's going after doing their first poetry book?
Okay. So several things. So, I mean, I think you'd have to have more than just yourself to discern where you're at as a poet somehow when you're thinking about putting a collection together.
Sure.
And for a lot of different reasons, because of the revision question. I mean, just to get a better perspective on the quality of your work. I think it's really easy as writers when we just, like we were talking about earlier, about scratching out first drafts, we can get so infatuated and just like fly off on how it makes us feel, you know, back to the delusional. And then all of a sudden, we really haven't separated ourselves. And like I love this way, and how to learn how to serve the poem. Serving the poem is a major ethical principle in my practice. I have to serve. I am not, it's a very clear relationship. So for a new poet, I would suggest.
See, I've had that term when it comes to composing music.
Okay.
Because I've had about three bars of music.
Okay.
With Highland bagpipes, a lot of the music it's four lines.
Okay.
Right? So it's 16 bars.
Wow.
A lot of the music is really, I mean, it's like blues. It's short.
Yeah.
Right? So I've had times where early within my composition days, I had something, I didn't know how to write it, but I knew how to play it. I'd take it to my instructor and say, well, I only have these three bars.
Yeah.
I haven't worked out the other 15 bars, you know, whatever.
Right.
And, you know, here I'm with my instructor and he's, oh yeah, these three bars are great. And, you know, or four bars. And he says, well, let's change the fourth bar. And here's the second part. Do you mind if I go for a third part or second part, third part, whichever? And I'm like, no, right? Because the important thing to me there is I don't care if I do this tune collaboratively with someone else.
Right.
The credit isn't as so important. It's that the tune does come out.
Exactly.
It's
the
not
life
about
of the
me.
Art is what's
right.
Yeah, exactly. So to get a more reasonable assessment of what you're doing and to help you kind of reflect on your own, the quality of your work, I think that would be an important relationship to establish. The second thing is, if you're looking at a collection, even if it's going to be self-published, like say Confessions was for me, all 25 poems in Confessions, I made sure were all published. Every single one had seen the light of day. And the reason, so when I look at a poetry book, number one, I mean, at all times, when you're looking at a poetry book, for me, the act page, which is like the lungs of the book, okay, where the poems have been, here's the deal, has the world said yes to Boys before Boys said yes to me?
Oh, interesting.
Okay, it's a real dynamic issue. Because what I can do then is, if I have a confidence already established by the world and editors and magazines saying, yes, we loved your work, we published it, it already has a life existing in the world. This is just a deeper echo of those original voices and those original relationships,
sure.
Right?
Sure.
And it also, and just from like Tom was saying about economic credibility, I know for a fact it raises the level economically dramatically in a book. From a self-published perspective, I don't know if that's the same as a publisher's perspective, because you've got a whole team of other people involved in these deals when you're getting published from publishers, which I had no knowledge of until I just went through this process. But it's real, and they're there, and they're really behind you, and you know, it's kind of like a nice collaborative deal.
Well, both approaches are valid. That's the thing, is just like you were saying, you know, the south end of the island versus the north end of the island. It's all valid.
Yeah, it's all
and
valid.
And whether or not it is something that's done by a publisher, or you're the one that's doing the publishing, or some mix of it,
it's all good.
Yeah, it's just a question to me of, you know, I like it when I see writers encouraging writers to get
absolutely.
The word out there.
That's
right
all
now.
That matters. Buddy.
Because right now we need ideas. We need folks to know how to express emotion, how to express reality.
And if it happens in community, it has a whole other dimension to it than if it's just an individual working in like corporate America or doing something very self-sustaining.
Well, then let me just riff off of that, because you just did a fine way of wrapping this right back around to writing on Whidbey Island, right. A celebration of the community of writers here.
Yeah, but I'm thinking, I can't remember the name to save the life of me right now. I think it was the guy that wrote The Emperor of Ice Cream.
I don't know.
It's a kind of huge, famous poem. I came across it in Salem's Lot.
Okay.
Because Stephen King was putting different things at the beginning of each chapter, whether it was Bob Dylan lyric or poems or whatever. I can't remember his name right now. Amazing poem. Yeah. And I ended up looking into the man himself and was like, yeah, this guy's a big CEO type guy.
Right.
Like, well, CEOs don't write stuff like this. And it's right. Like, well, yeah, but what was it? Boston had one of their members, band, you know, of course, one of their members, big CEO guy, and he was actually still running his company from the road.
Wow.
So, you know, sure, you can be that sure. unexpected corporate person that actually plays an amazing harp
or whatever it is. Right.
One of the other questions that I had for you, and I want to ask on our way out here, a friend of mine who writes poetry, at one point I talked to her about the self-publishing courses that Tom and I, workshops that we've done.
Right.
And she turned around and said, well, what about poetry as it goes to e-books? Hmm. Because I believe your books are also e-books.
Well, the two Boys, I think, is available on Kindle, but what was really strange was Confessions of a Pentecostal Buddhist went to Kindle because Create Space shifted gears on Amazon or something. And then all of a sudden, I had no knowledge of this until I got a check. All of a sudden, I get a check.
But you got a check.
I know it was one of the several checks, actually, for that book. But all of a sudden, Create Space sent me a check, and I was very confused. I'm thinking, okay, this is great. It must be like an error. Maybe I'll get a credit or something. And what had happened was they reprinted, in North Carolina, where that's all at, they redid the warehouse availability of Confessions again in paperback. Then all of a sudden, someone in Pennsylvania, like 2 weeks ago, on Facebook, takes this huge photograph of Confessions of a Pentecostal Buddhist and goes and invites me to be their friend. He goes, look what I just ordered. And I'm like, oh my God, it's still alive.
Yes.
It's living in the world.
It's alive.
And that was another word, Create Space. So I have, because I don't read from that book anymore. I mean, I will if I'm asked maybe, but I still have a little bit to sell. But I mean, it's not something I'm currently promoting or want to really be that attached to in the present moment. So,
right.
So yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Huh. But I would think Revision Buddy is going to be your question. And in building an act page and choosing a selection. I'm doing two books right now, two friends of mine. I'm working on chapbooks for them, with them. And it has a business aspect to it now for them, not for you. I'm here for you. but they can afford it. And it's just kind of a nice business thing I'm learning how to navigate as well, because I'm finally at the place where just my reputation or my life as a writer, I think I can offer a lot of things to people on different levels. I'm just trying to kind of feed that process a little
bit.
So,
yeah. Sure. Well, we need to wrap up. Okay. We're going to have a new record length Wowie podcast, but it's been an absolute joy.
We joked about it beforehand.
We set ourselves up.
We all have birthdays in this podcast.
Well, here's the surprise with the podcast that sometimes isn't a surprise, but today it is.
Okay.
Two things that we ask our guests.
Yes.
One of the elements to writing on Whidbey Island is relative to where we go and record, and sometimes we have background sounds.
Sure.
We've had turkey farms and seagulls and jets and all sorts of noise.
Cool. Okay.
And it's a character.
Yeah.
So one question is, where would you suggest that we go and interview someone? And the other question is what writer on Whidbey Island would you suggest we...
Or a publisher, or a bookstore, or
library. And I have to have those answers right now.
No, you don't.
Oh, whoa, that's going to be a lot. Okay, good.
But I have thousands of words an hour.
Yeah,
I'll give you an answer. You, they're going to be beautiful words next week.
Okay.
But that person that you name will be very excited to hear their name
recorded. Well, I mean, have you talked? Because here's what I think is, I think she is the most incredible enigma of self-publishing as a poet and this weird world that I got. I did a really cool, Judith Adams and I did
oh, yeah.
a, yeah, Judith and yeah. I did a really cool, love thing. And for National Poetry Month last year, we did an entire show called The Politics of Intimacy at Kufa Library.
Yeah.
And Andre Ferriante played guitar with us. And it was an awesome performance. 2 hours. We rehearsed for 9 months. I mean, it was killer.
Wow.
But that was the first time Judith Adams' perception of, like, you know, when I met her, she's like, oh, damn good. I have all my books are self-published. I mean, or I have my own publisher. And then she introduces me to her editor, who's like a high school editor guy from Everett. Yeah. And he's like, I'm really not an editor. I just really helped you. It was really, it was such a cool, it was such a cool mosaic of having a different person's life experience describe what they do, be so good at it. She's incredible as a poet. I think Judith would be an awesome. I know she's super busy though with the Speakers Bureau, but that's who
we
I
shall
suggest.
See.
Yeah,
we Judith can always Adams, ask.
Yeah, she's a great poet.
All right.
Well, and what was the other question? What soundscape?
About
that? What soundscape?
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. You let us know. We'll put it up on the blog after.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. So on that note, this has been another episode of Writing on Whidbey Island. We have had a delightful time getting to talk with Daniel Edward Moore. My name is Don Scobie. Over here, we also have Tom Trimbeth. And
hello.
And once again, we have been recording today from Whidbey Made, which is a lovely new shop in downtown Oak Harbor on Pioneer Way. And they have artisan gifts. And if you live here, you should come in and check out the shop and buy stuff, which includes they carry my book and two of my CDs. Personal plug, yes.
And some fine tea.
And some fine tea and many other wonderful products. Also, between Brian and Catherine, Brian, we'll have to find out, but he also teaches some woodworking. And some of his products are also available here. But the main thing is Artisan Gifts. It's a beautiful shop. It is on the water side of Pioneer, which if you live here, you understand what that means. But do come check out the shop. And also, when you have guests this summer, bring them to the shop because they're going to love getting souvenirs from local made artists right here from Whidbey Made. So once again, thank you for joining us. This has been Writing on Whidbey Island, and please join us next time.
Bye, y'all.
Bye. Thanks, Catherine.
Take care.